And where is it? Right here.
Here, inside.
Okay, so you don't have to go too far to get excited. All right, the first song we're going to do is For God Has Commanded the Light to Shine, and it's number 29 in your voice.
Seven.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely, yeah.
Okay. Get out of my...
Yeah, take your coat off. It's hot.
Okay.
Make yourself comfortable.
Okay.
You like that stool better?
Yeah. One says that self-will is the most widespread commodity in hell. That is certainly true. Hell is and consists of self-will. If there would be no self-will, there would be no hell and no devil. This is a quote from a book called Theologia Germanica. Now, I don't have time to tell you about the story of all of this, but it means a German theology. It's really a no name, so don't worry about the title. They called it that name, and you'll understand why in a second. But I want to give you some history behind this writing. There are now over 200 translations of it. And it's not known today. The church, as I'll tell you, sort of squashed it out. But it's a mystical writing. And it was something that changed my life. This book changed Martin Luther's life. The teachings in this book changed his life. And we know he was sort of a rascal. You know, he liked nailing stuff on the doors of the church, right? And he stirred up problems. He really was anti-religious in his time and had to go into hiding towards the end of his life, or he would have been martyred by the church, like hundreds of others. This work influenced his life so much that at the end of his life, he told his followers, the Lutheran followers, "I want you to take all my work that I've ever done and put it out in the street and burn it." He instructed them to burn it all. Well, guess what? They didn't do it. And the Lutheran church today is following all the works that he told them to burn. And they're not following this, okay? So we've got quite a secret here. And I love finding hidden treasures. I'll tell you how I found the book. In 1996, just a year, the year Diane and I got married, we were involved in union life. One of the, Linda Bunting, who was had meetings at her place regularly, had a book on her table. Well, when the Spirit of the Lord quickens you, like many of you in here can testify, you can be a little aggressive when it comes to wanting to get your hands on things, right? Mm-hmm. Well, of course, I wanted every book on the table, right? But I was gravitated towards one book that was written in Old English, and it was called The Bondage of the Will by Martin Luther, which was a byproduct of this book, of this teaching. He said, burn everything I've ever done except my one writing called The Bondage of the Will. It was a diatribe between Erasmus and Martin Luther over the discussion of whether man has a free will. That was what it was all about. I started to talk about this with Martha and Tony, and Martha asked me to bring a message this morning about it. So we're going to hit the refresh button again. I want to remind you I don't know anything. Okay? And we enter into every conversation speaking that. I don't know anything. And I don't think I'm something. I might act like that. You might see that sometimes. So forgive me. But inside I know that. And so we need to trust that spirit that's within us, that doesn't know anything and that can't do anything. That's the spirit you trust, because then the revelation flows out, doesn't it? And you can trust it then, right? And so we can trust that. So when I tell you details, I don't want you to think I'm something, okay? Don't start thinking I'm something. But I spent 3 years pretty much in torment over these writings. They tormented me. It was difficult because I couldn't get anyone to agree with me. No one would say, Mike, wow, that's good stuff. Everyone said, you're nuts. Everybody. Well, they said he was nuts. And the Catholic Church came out and denounced this as heresy. Okay? The Anglican Church came out and said it was heresy. And even John Calvin came out and said it was heresy, which was one of Luther's buddies. They both loved Augustine, who taught Reformed theology. And so the Reformed theology was heavy, certainly in Germany and Europe, and Dutch, with Dutch Reformed. That's what I gravitated towards. So I was very attracted to that because I was, before I came into Union, I was Reformed theology. So I was attracted to Luther because that he was involved in that himself. But he was teaching the evangelical system. And he was promoting, you know, obviously, liturgy, you know, which is all works, you know, has no value. So that took a lot for him to go out and tell everybody, everything I've said is a lie. And we need to realize in the spirit, as we travel and grow in our understanding, that when we let go of some things, when we learn new things, half the time or a lot of the time, it replaces something that we find out isn't true. We go, wow, you know, I guess that wasn't true. I'm not going to say that again. But we've been preaching it. I used to preach in Union Life circles, and I stood up and preached the wrong thing. Whoops. So here's Luther. Gets a hold of this book. There's an anonymous author because this book was written in 1350. Oh, wow. And at that time, there was a lot of persecution going on. There weren't any Bibles, unless you spoke Latin. No Bibles. And there's this little group called the Friends of God. That's where this came from. They lived in a cave. They met in caves. And they wrote down the things they knew, and here it is. They wrote down all these things they knew. What I just read you was what they said. They call the knowledge of the tree and good and evil the knowledge of self-will. It's also the tree of judgment. We found out yesterday, the tree of judgment of good and evil. It's the tree of free will. It's the tree of free choice. Because if you're choosing between two things, one's bad and one's good. And that's why it's so significant. And that's why nobody agreed with me. Because that's hard for man to hear that message. And it's very difficult for the religious people to hear it because they're so deluded that they don't believe they're deluded anymore. And it talks about that in here. And I'm going to do, this is going to be, I'm going to be reading out of this quite a bit, okay? Because we're going to let Luther give the message this morning of what led him to this teaching, the bondage of the will. Now, the struggle for me was, God, what do you mean I don't have a free will? I mean, I got nothing to do with this. That's right, Mike. You have nothing to do with it. The message that Kathy gave yesterday, it was amazing of realizing the passage that before I was ever born, I was made holy. Yeah. Well, what are you going to do about that? Are you going to do anything about that? Huh? Who's going to do something about that? Before you were born. That is unbelievable. Isn't that wonderful? You can't do anything about that except recognize it.
Yeah.
Recognize it. And know it. It's wonderful. So, the Pope and the Protestant movement, Calvin, all came against Luther. And he went into hiding, and out of that hiding came the work, The Bondage of the Will. Luther praised the book since it taught correctly about sin, free will, the old man, Christ, rebirth, and right understanding as to what Adam and Christ mean and how Adam must die within and Christ rise. All things are good. Nothing but sin is contrary to God. Everything in creation is a welcome to you. Don't judge it. We talked about that yesterday. Everything in creation is a welcome to you. As long as it does not take place for your own gain. I'm reading from this book right now, okay? This isn't me. Or in accordance with your own will, but flows out and is in accordance with God's will. Well, in Thessalonians, it says what God's will is, and that's to be thankful in everything, to appreciate everything. So this is the will of God. I was in a Pentecostal movement then, and we were doing the blab it and grab it thing, or grab it and blab it, or whatever it was, you know. We were praying for cars, and we were, you know, and it was, you know what, they're excited people, you know, they're excited, and we're not going to judge them, and it was sort of fun, but it didn't work, you know, it didn't work, but Malcolm Smith was teaching there then, and when it says all things are good, I think of him saying, you always have a green light, because people have come up and asked me, since I've been here, well, how do you do this and how do you do that? Well, you can't do anything. That's your answer. That's my answer to your question. You can't do it.
No.
You have to know it. And from that recognition then comes the ability. We don't create the ability. The recognition brings with it the power to carry it out. It's a hunger. I call it a hunger, a drive. You know, that's what I call it. And so it's like a dog who hasn't been fed for a while, and you put his favorite food in front of him, you know. Is he going to say no? Is it an option? You know, he takes your hand off trying to get to it, you know. That's how the Spirit works when he gets a hold of you. You know, you can't say no. It's not optional. That's something. And it relieves you of the burden. You know, it's not up to you. And Luther was this was the message. This was the message in the book, the message in The Bondage of the Will, was to bring man to the place where he realized he couldn't do anything. And, you know, we've got John where Jesus talks about it as well. So you always have a green light. Always. And there's a scripture somewhere says the answer is yes. I don't know just where it's at, but I know it just says your answer is always yes. So when somebody comes to you, listen to your spirit. You always initially want to say yes to them. And I've talked to Nancy about people coming up and panhandling, asking them for money. Well, I've started to ask them, how much do you want now? Because they've come with this one gal came up and said, well, you know, I need it. Can you spare some change? Can you give me a couple bucks, you know? And I says, well, how much do you need? Well, she was taken back by that, didn't know what to say. I lost my billfold, was the next response, and it cost me about $13 to get home. I said, well, how much do you need? She says, well, $13. And so I pulled out my billfold, and I had quite a few 50s in there. You know, I made sure she could see them, you know. And I said, how much do you need? She says, well, about $13. So I gave her 20, okay. But that's all she could take. Now, here's the Father who's given you himself, and he's saying you got a green light. Where's the limitation there? I don't see any limitation there myself. I'm not seeing the limitation. Now, it doesn't mean you're going to ask for things, okay? But you're going to find that when you come to a place where it doesn't matter whether you get something or not, that it will start to flow. That it will start to flow. Because it won't matter. And so whatever you get, you'll be thankful for. And it might come in abundance, it might not. But you'll be thankful because it doesn't matter how much comes. So now the title of the message is called the Tree of Self-Will, okay, which is what they called it, okay. This isn't my message now, okay. It's this message. I spent 3 years in this book and in The Bondage of the Will, and nobody understands that the tree of the knowledge of good and evil is the tree of self-will. Nobody understands that. This was the only, and they've tried to muffle it out, right? So you can go get your own copy, and I don't agree with everything that's in here, but the highlights that are in here are, as you're going to see, are very interesting, very different, and it's exciting. So, sin is defined, so here's their definition of sin. Sin is defined as nothing but the turning away on the part of the creature from the unchangeable good toward the changeable. That's how they define sin. Unchangeable to changeable. Heaven to hell. Same thing. That is why we say there is no true being outside or without him. The fall consisted of this assumption for himself that he too was something, and that something was his, and that something was his own property. So Paul wrote about this too. We had this verse yesterday. For if a man think himself to be something when he is nothing, he deceiveth himself. Yeah. Well, we've got to realize that nothing means nothing. That's hard. Because a little leaven leaveneth the whole lump. And so you can't hang on to anything. And that's the same thing as saying it doesn't matter what happens out here, okay? We don't judge by appearances anymore. And then you're delivered from the appearance world if it doesn't matter. And so in everything that comes to us, we give thanksgiving. Now, there might be times you're sort of crying, you know, and you got to work it up, you know. Well, go in your closet. You know, don't let anybody see you. It can be hard. So Jesus had difficulty explaining that to his disciples, and the majority of them left him when they finally got it. And I'm going to read those passages later to sort of bring that home. And so from the tree of self, well, now this is my passage that I wrote here. This is me. The tree of self-will, and so from the tree of self-will came the system of free will, and man then began to believe that God was at his call, and that if he made the right combination of choices, God would have to respond to him and reward him for his good works. He began to believe that God made him in his own image. And so the change came, and the judgment of good and evil began to rule the world and its proprietor, its prince, was fear. So the judgment of good and evil began to rule this world, and its king was fear. What a mess.
Yeah.
So the fear came out of the judgment of good and evil. It produced fear in the man. Well, he should have recognized that. That means something's out of line. So, to me, successful Christian living is how much fear is in your life? What are you afraid of? And so ask the Father, ask yourself, what am I afraid of? What is it I'm afraid of? And he'll tell you, not what should I do. Don't get caught back up into the works again. It's not what should I do. What am I afraid of? And why? And when you ask that to yourself, the answer comes. So, then what happened? The sense of discord is a misunderstanding of the purpose of our senses. And everybody would like to have ease in their lives, right? And wouldn't you just like to have a week where it was just ease? You know, because 100 things come into our minds and they torment us. Okay? Whoa. They torment us. Not disease. Disease. Disease, yeah. Not disease. Ease. Isn't that crazy how close they are? When we saw crippled people, when the man was in the cave cutting his arms with his flesh, and he claimed that there were legions of devils in him. It was all the thoughts of man. It was all the thoughts of man. That's what the legions are. That's us. You know, we read all these things in Scripture and we think it's for someone else. We were the man in the cave scratching our arms in pain and anguish and gnashing our teeth because of the tares. These are also the tares, okay? The tares weren't people. He says, well, let the tares and the wheat grow up together. Well, the tares are all the wicked thoughts that are will be purified by righteous judgment. See, so the tares weren't people, because we're thinking that's somebody and the tares are going to be thrown into the furnace. It never means that, ever. There isn't any people who are going to get thrown in no furnace. The tares are all of the thoughts that are contrary to what we're talking about right now. That's the tares. So God says, let them grow up together, you know, and he purifies them by his love, which is the fire that consumes, by the way. So the lake of fire is God's love. Isn't that crazy? Well, we're foolish minds. Somebody's being held on a string, you know, and when all the flesh burns off of it, well, I'll attach some more to him and I'll burn it some more. I believe that. That's what evangelical Christianity teaches, folks. They teach that. Thank God we're out of it. Oh my gosh. Okay. So, the purpose of the senses are not for judging what takes place in time and space. But that's what trips us up. The purpose of our senses was to observe, to be a watcher, to see the activity of the Spirit go before us, to see the activity of the Father go before us and straighten out the crooked path before you ever get there. As I started to learn some of the deeper understandings of what this ministry teaches, I felt sort of a tap on my shoulder. See, I finally had slowed down enough in my mind where I knew God. I wasn't ahead of him anymore in the turmoil of my mind, right? I could feel he was catching up with me. Now, God doesn't catch up with anybody. Just bear with me, okay? But this was just a sense I had, that he was going before me in my business. I have 40 people working for me. And I can't go in there to work and think, how can I manage these 40 people? And I think this could help you, Wilford. We were talking about business. I can't go in there and think, how can I manage these 40 people? Because I have to say, I can't. I can't manage them. I can't. The business has gotten to a size now where my flesh can't get its arms around it. It used to get its arms around it, right? And it thought it was in control. It can't. It's out of my control now. I've got people that don't know the Father running this business by the Spirit. They know who I am. I tell them who I am. And they see the blessing of God in the business. They know that. They sense it. They know, because we talk about it. I don't preach to them, but they sense it. So for nothing that is worthy of the term good belongs to man. It belongs only to the eternal, to true goodness. He who claims it himself acts unrighteously and against God. And I love this verse, this Proverbs 27:2, and I'm not trying to puff Kathy up, but when you remember things, they become part of you, you know, just like Scripture. Tony and I've talked about it. It becomes part of you. But last year she said, it's okay for God to tell me how beautiful and treasured and wonderful I am, but it's never okay for me to say it. And here's a verse that says that. I found one that says it. Proverbs 27:2. Let another man praise thee. But not thine own mouth. Even a stranger, but not thine own lips. Yeah, isn't that crazy? That wonderful? So that's the flow, you know. That's the flow of the Father when it comes that direction. That's the only direction. It's that way, not the other way, okay? Not from me outward. So when I'm up here speaking to you, that's why we want to realize, I want to tell you, I don't know anything. You know, just because I'm up here wagging my mouth and shaking my head doesn't mean I know anything. Because I don't want to waste your time, and I value you, each one of you. Okay? We want the words to be His words. And that even can be a little nerve-wracking. You know, that can make you a little nervous. But you can't do it. You just got to keep hitting that easy button. To me, that's the easy button. You know, the little... You guys, I'm thinking I'm in the U.S., but the easy button is a commercial in the United States for Office Max, and people hit it, and whatever they need in their office appears like magic, you know, like a genie shows up. The room fills up with everything you need. You know, that's what happens when you go into the store. See, that's what they're promoting. So hit the easy button, you know. Well, entering meditation, preparing for these things, we hit the easy button. And I mean, it's not a formula. It's something you recognize. It's something you realize that we then can be taught. And I have to do this all the time. I have to remind myself because the mind gets chugging up again, you know, and if off it goes. And I'm learning to realize there's a green light all the time and not to condemn myself about the mind moving along. But it, as it gets going, sometimes you slip back in to some of these things, you know, that you have to again remind yourself, you know, that you don't know anything. So that's what they're talking about, the bondage of the will. Man is not free. And we've went much higher than that. We say there is no man. But here's people walking around in an elusive state trying to claim that they can change the mind of God, who is changeless reality. Here we are with our little pea brains, Lanyon calls it, our little 2x4 mind, thinking we can alter the universal power of God, thinking we can affect Him by anything we do or choose or will. We can't affect that. It's already in place. Before you were born, I made you holy. That's a perfect example of it. Before you were ever born, well, just rest in that. You know, and that's not your understanding of it, that's the soul of you. And you're going to see that in your neighbor as we apply what we learned yesterday. That's where you're going to see this, is in your neighbor. So that's how we direct the energy, is towards each other. Towards each other. Not this is the wrong way. Not towards me, remember? This is the way. This is the flow. You know? Proverbs 27:2 is the flow verse. We'll call it the flow verse, okay? It's the directional flow. So now the illusion. We're going to start talking about the illusion. That I ascribe some good to myself stems from the illusion that the good belongs to me, or that I am it. For when the illusion and the ignorance turn into a realization of the truth, the assumption that good comes from us will disappear on its own. I'm quoting them again. The eternal good does not have to come into the soul, for it's already there. Isn't that something? Now, I don't know of too many ministries that teach that. Except maybe union life in light of the world, infinite way maybe, but certainly not out in the church world. They're all trying to work it up in an elusive state, with an elusive identity. How can you work something up when it didn't even exist? It's no wonder man's frustrated. I don't know how they do it. I don't know how I did it. But the soul of God was sustaining me, and I didn't even know it, right? Kept me from blowing my brains out, apparently. You know? But we start our journey in hell, where satisfaction evades us. So when man seeks his own good, he never actually finds it, because he is looking for it outside of himself. He wants stuff. I like stuff. Diane's got a house full of stuff.
Garage full of stuff.
Martha banned her from shopping in Olinda last week. Diane, you don't need any more stuff in that house. Thank you, Martha. Thank you. I'm going to have to send you something for that. Thank you very much. So as we become selfless in seeing that in reality there's no independent self, we're set free. There is no independent self. There is no me. There is no you. There's only the Father in me and you. And so that recognition then, what we found yesterday, which I'm hoping Tony and the rest of you help develop that some more, because I just saw it a few days ago, that the command to love your neighbor is everlasting life. Well, I just cracked the lid open on that. That's beautiful. Well, there's got to be more there than just seeing that. But I think it has to do with Proverbs 27:2, with this flow, doesn't it? As that flow goes the right way, it becomes the rivers of living water that it talks about in Revelation, as they flow out from us to everyone. That's the rivers. Adam, I, self, self-will, sin, the old man, the turning away, and separation from God, that is all one and the same thing. In this true light and in this true love, I, me, mine, you, yours, have no abiding refuge. So there's a lot of names for them. Now I'm going to read a passage, and I think it's necessary to read the whole thing. So you have to bear with me. It might sound a little studious, but it's good, especially right at the end. Which I've never heard before, by the way, until Martha asked me to do this again, and so I read through the book again since she's asked me. And I found this extra little deal in there. So chapter 40 of the Theologia Germanica. On the basis of what has been said so far, we have to ask, how can the two following assertions exist side by side? For we have first of all said that knowledge about God without love for God never leads to blessedness. This sounds as if there would be a certain knowledge regarding God, even though there's no love for him. Then secondly, we have said earlier, wherever God is truly known, he is also loved. in the very knowledge of God, there is also love for him. So they're saying they're the same. The understanding and recognition of God is understanding love. And now we found out that that means I love my neighbor. I'm loving God. That's what it means. How do these two statements agree? Not one thing here. They don't, is what they're saying. There's some caveman English in here, so you have to excuse me, because they wrote it, they pretty much tried to leave it natural, right? Matter of fact, there were pictures drawn on some of the walls even, they found. So some of it was pretty basic, you know, and some of them probably didn't know how to read. Anyways, what we here are talking about are two lights, one true and one false. By the same token, there are also two kinds of love, one true and one false. Each kind of love must be informed or guided by its own light or inner knowledge. Now, the true light makes for true love. The false light makes for false love, or the natural. We said that the false light is of the natural order and nature itself. Its characteristics and marks are consequentially everything in the natural world, namely, I, mine, me, and so on. Therefore, it must needs be inwardly deceived and false, for no I and no mine ever came to the true light and to undefiled inner knowledge. If one is to come to inner knowledge of the one truth, the I and the mind must depart and get lost.
Wow, yeah.
I like that, get lost. Pretty slang English there. It is a mark of the natural false light that it is avidly bent on much learning. It derives much pleasure, joy, and glory from its schooling and knowledge. It therefore asks for more and more learning, and in this regard never comes to peace or fulfillment. The more and higher it probes in its quest for knowledge, the more it seems to enjoy and glory in the climb itself.
Yeah.
When it comes so high that it thinks it knows all and is above all, it has arrived as its peak of enjoyment and glory. It comes to regard knowing as the best and the noblest. It instructs love to love the knowledge. And learning it has garnered as the best and noblest there is. But knowledge and learning have in such a case become more loved than that which is the object of knowledge. Yes, the false natural light loves its knowledge and its learning more than that which should have been the object of knowledge. In fact, the natural light is composed of knowledge and nothing else.
That's right.
Wow.
It is conceivable that this natural light could really know and grasp God and unadulterated. Simple truth as it is in God, were it not for one thing, it cannot become liberated from its nature. I read that just exactly the way it's written, and I'm not sure I quite understand that last couple sentences real well, but we're going to move on. Which is concern about it cannot become liberated because it's concern about itself and only things of self. Now, I'm here to the end, and I want you to listen to the last sentence of this, because it's something I think is very, very significant about this whole teaching. In this sense, we face here a mental and spiritual knowledge without love for that which is known. It rises and climbs so high that it finally develops the fanciful notion that it can actually know God. This is theology. And the unadulterated simple truth. but what it really loves is still itself. It is true that God can be known by no one or nothing but God.
That's right.
This is the activity inside us, see? This is what we can trust. The soul of you, the God that knew you before you were born and made you holy, is now communicating to you. He's doing it. That's what it says here. Only God can know God. No man seeks God. No man can know God. You can't do a thing to come to know God. And so this is why the fact that the soul of God dwelling in every man is his salvation. There's just a lot of people out there don't know it yet. But we're not going to judge them. We're going to love them. And we've, in what I've just read, we've attempted to screw even what we know onto our humanity because we think it's still got something it can do, but it can't do anything. And they really buried that with this, you know. That's pretty much the theme of the whole book. So it is true that God can be known by no one or nothing but God.
Yes.
That's pretty cool. I think we sort of flirted with that a little bit, but it's the end game. It's really the end game. For me, you know, there's nothing I can do. Okay. As we learn of him, the draught of natural understanding will be burned away by understanding to me how to love my neighbor as myself. So I have to talk about those two together now. I can't talk about self unless I include my neighbor. Right? Aren't they the same thing? And then he said, before that, love your neighbor as yourself, love God with all your heart and soul and mind. And the two commands are the same. So here's God loving himself, and that's why, again, a unique scripture in the Old Testament, which is a message I'm working on for when I get home, it said, salvation has come unto God. That's what it says. Salvation is coming to God. It said it just that way. This has just said the same thing, didn't it? God is going to do it. And from where God sits, it's already done. Now, we've got to realize, guys, that this realm here is illusion. You have to realize that. I don't care how much it hurts you or pains you. We have to realize that this realm is illusion. Not what's created, because we said everything God made is good, but our concepts. Our concepts, our own understanding, is the illusion. And so then, what we see, sin, disease, death, all these things are not real, and they should become unspoken words. In my mind, they should become unspoken words. Because when the light shines, it doesn't speak. And so if you're dealing with these things, do it inside yourself. That's why we're talking about judging. Don't agree with somebody about their problems they're having. Love them. Just love them. And ask them, what do they want? It's the Father asking. They tell you, it's the Father telling you what they want. And don't judge them if it doesn't seem like the right thing. Just love them. Just like when the Father told me, I'm not feeling so good. Well, can God not feel good? Well, apparently through this lovely woman, he wasn't feeling so good. You know, and so I went to her and said, "What can I do for you, my love?" And in that, I received abundantly, abundantly. And I don't understand all that. I'm not saying I understand it. Let's not try to figure it out. It just happened. But it's fitting into all of these end games, isn't it? God, wow, that's crazy. I mean, if anybody's going to get burned at the stake, you get up and say, "Well, God needs to be saved." But we have to understand the unity and the union between us and God to know what that means, because that's not what it's saying. God don't need anything. I was blowing me away. Okay, so here we go. I want to set this down for a second, and I want to reiterate a little more about this through Scripture. Jesus had trouble getting the Gospel of John, of course, through Tony's bringing it home. I had gravitated it long before that, but it, through his teaching, have realized how significant the gospel is, even to me, even more than the epistles, because it really deals with man correctly. It's really the one that really brings it home. And he starts out in the first chapter and says, "We were born not of blood, nor of the will of the flesh." It's not your desire. It's not man's desire to be born of God. His desire is contrary to God. And then he, just in case you didn't understand that, he said, "Or of the will of man." Either one, they're sort of the same, but I'm going to say it again. If you desire it, you aren't desiring it, and you don't will to come to God. Okay? We don't choose God. Mm-hmm. He's already chosen us before we were born. He made us holy. And of course we know in Genesis, it's probably what it's referring to, you know, is the original creation, when he rested in his love, way back then. So we're not born of the flesh or the will of man, but of God. God is communicating to himself in you. That's salvation has come to our God, to our the Father within us. It's just an awakening. That's what it means. We're just being awakened. Right? So to as many as received him, to them gave he the power to become the sons of God, even to them which believe on his name, which were born not of blood, nor of the will of the flesh, nor of the will of man, but of God.
Bingo.
Again, he says it again. Well, why did they do that, Tony? Because they're not getting it. These people, guys, we have to realize the audience in the New Testament even didn't get the message. They didn't understand it. There were just a couple. And even through the whole Old Testament, besides the few that wrote some of the books, it was only Caleb and Joshua. And Joshua was only halfway there, remember? Caleb had to drag him in. He had to talk him into it. So there aren't very many that have really come to know themselves, to really know themselves. Because man, and that's what the stories are for, is to convince us man can't come to God. God has already made you a creature of himself. And so we can't get there by making the right choices or pulling the right levers. I'm not here because I made a right combination of choices. That's not why I'm here. Now, you can, on the outward, you can see activity and stuff, but we don't judge by that, you know? We don't judge by those things. So now the story that Jesus, he finally got sort of frustrated with them. So in John 6, he says, no man can come to me except the Father which has sent him, draw him, and I will raise him up on the last day. Now, the last day, I talked about this in a message called Time Shall Be No More. So I'm not going to, the last day is a whole message on itself, okay? But I'll just tell you a statement. The last day for us is when we live in the now. That's the last day for us. It's not about talking about some last day somewhere. Our last day is when we live in the now. When time and space don't affect us anymore. And so to be absent from the body is to be present with the now. That's our last day. So Jesus, he's for two chapters of John 5, he says, the Son can do nothing of himself. Huh? That's what they did, huh? What are you talking about? Don't call me good, he said in John. Only the Father's good. The Son can do nothing of himself. And they were following him along, and he was sharing. Well, there was a huge throng following him, along with his disciples. And he kept saying it and saying it. Finally, he turned to them in disgust. I can feel it a little bit. And he says, I'm telling you, it's the Spirit that quickeneth. The flesh profiteth nothing. It's God restoring to himself salvation and honor. That's what it's talking about. They're all connected. The Spirit is quickening us now. Don't get tangled up in the time and space thing. It doesn't matter if we can't see it in our neighbor. Forget about your neighbor, whether he sees it or not. We're not. He didn't say, make sure your neighbor sees it. He says, love your neighbor. Don't force feed him. Don't get the bathroom plunger out. Don't go home to John and say, John, open your mouth. Here it is, okay? Just love him. And you probably already do, but we love our neighbor, realizing there's no separation. There is no separation between us and even every person walking on the face of the earth. There is no separation as long as we withdraw judgment. That's the key, is withdrawing judgment. He says, the words I speak unto you, they are spirit and they are life. But there are some of you that don't believe it. That's okay. That's okay. For Jesus from the beginning knew them. Well, this wasn't some, he wasn't a guru who had a crystal ball. He listened to him talk. It doesn't take long. You sit down with somebody, and in 10 minutes, it doesn't take them 10 minutes to tell you their middle name. I know what the flesh sounds like, guys, because I'm a great example. And so I know what it sounds like. And when I counseled people and was involved in ministry, I could hear it. Because there was something in me that identified with that. I said, no, that's not right. And I whispered it to myself. No, that ain't right. And I did marriage counseling, and I had this one woman come in, you know, she wanted counseling. But she entered into the room with a list about 10 things she wanted changed about her husband. I need counseling. This is my problem, you know. She hung it up. So I listened to her for a couple sessions. And I finally asked her for it, and I crumpled it up and threw it in the trash. And I said, you're the problem. She didn't come back. She didn't pay me either. I was supposed to get paid, you know, but I didn't get paid either. I should have asked for it up front before I crumpled that up, shouldn't I? If you got $40. Oh, boy. So he repeats it again, and he says, "Therefore said I unto you that no man can come unto me except it were given unto him from my Father." Well, the giving happened before we were born. We were already given everything for life and godliness. We just need to awaken to it. We just need to come awake to it. Okay, back to the book. That's what Jesus, that's Jesus' definition of Theologica Germanica. There. Germanica. Nice to have Karen help me with that. I don't know. That's not even the German. They say it different in German. But, okay. Page 48 here. Let's go to page 48. If you are to ascribe everything good to the eternal only good, as we rightfully and truthfully should, we must also rightfully and truthfully attribute it. We also should rightfully and truthfully attribute to it the beginning of progression. I'm going to read that again. If you are to ascribe everything good to the eternal only good, as we rightfully and truthfully should, we must also rightfully and truthfully attribute to it the beginning of progression and the end of our course. Does that make sense? Okay. By this affirmation, we also acknowledge that man and all created beings are nothing in themselves. There's nothing there. That means nothing, by the way. Okay. Let me add another short remark, he says, whoever this anonymous person is, the friend of God. If you can come to the point where you are to God what your hand is to you, be content. This is an act of subordination, it says. We're not the head, okay? All right? You don't have to make decisions, guys. That's painful. Now, it doesn't mean we don't, but it's not something you dwell on. That's what we're talking about. If you've got something that's come to you and you don't know what to do, don't do anything. That's what it's saying. Don't do anything. And you've always got a green light. Remember that. And if you remember in Scripture, when they were traveling around, Paul, he just went everywhere. But then he said the Spirit forbade him to go to this one place. Well, the Spirit will give you the red light, okay? But you, unless you've got that, you've always got a green light. What to do? To love everybody. And to go do whatever. Don't dwell on the process of living in this realm. And don't judge by it. So if something comes to you and it's difficult and it's hard, and here we go, taking thought. That means the mind spins. It doesn't mean you don't think about it. It's talking about the mind spinning, right? That's what it means. If your mind starts spinning, now, I'm just telling you, running a business and then being in the building business, there were many nights that I couldn't sleep because something would happen and I, how could he do that? Listen, all of us have had it. Or we've got children or family members that are out there and they're doing stuff, aren't they? Oh my gosh. They're doing things. And we don't like it. So we start spinning. And as soon as it happens, you walk through the gate of hell, gnashing of teeth, torment. And it's really none of your business what they're doing, really. It's none of our business. Our business is to love them. That's it. It's a simple command. Just love them. Doesn't matter what they're doing. A teenager is a difficult thing. I had an opportunity to help raise a couple girls. And it was sort of crazy. You know, they were pretty good when they were 10 and 12, but boy, as soon as the teen thing hit, why, I remember one of them named Rebecca. She was a wonderful girl. She wanted me to buy the bumper sticker that says, hire a teenager while they still know everything. Well, she hadn't went to college yet. They get sort of smart. I think they know what they're doing, right? And here us parents are, muffling them, smothering them, controlling them. You know, well, they don't belong to us. They're not our property. So just love them. And don't worry about their nothingness. Don't worry about this nothingness activity that's going on in the world, in the flesh. Don't worry about it. It's an illusion. That's why we shouldn't get so disturbed when someone passes out of this illusion.
Yeah.
Don't get so concerned about it. Just go and love the people that are at the service.
Yeah.
Just go love them. And realize it's hard. You know, when we lost Liz, it was tough. And Tony said, Mike, it's okay for a few days. He said that specifically. He said, okay, go ahead. A few days. But you got to realize we have a different hope than those dwelling in the elusive state of self-will. We have the hope. And I don't know what they're doing right now, but they're probably looking down at us poor blokes and saying, boy, I'll sure be glad when they get out of that hell.
Yeah.
Now we can get out of it now. Right now. We can get out of it by not judging by what we're seeing or hearing and realizing there is no self, let alone a self-will. Let alone that. That's just symptomatic. That's just a symptom. We've went higher than that. We're saying there's no such thing as a human being. Okay, here we go. This is a quote I read to us when we were in Inverloch, to all of us. The guys asked me to read a little bit out of it. So this is a quote from the book. Let me also say this. No great works and wonders God has ever wrought or shall ever do in or through his created world, not even God himself in his goodness, will make me blessed if they remain outside of me. For blessedness is only present to the extent to which it's within me, as a happening, as an activity.
Yeah.
As an inner knowledge, as love, as feeling, as taste. Mm-hmm. So these are what the sense is for, is to observe our love for our neighbor.
Yeah.
That's what it's saying. This thing here, 1350, the Friends of God. I think it's very significant to what this ministry believes in. Myself, a lot of keys in there, even some new stuff is in there. So you are the light of the world. You do not choose to be the light.
No.
You're the light. To think differently, okay? And this thing always is thinking differently, okay? It still does it. Don't pay any attention to that man behind the curtain, okay? Ever watch The Wizard of Oz? Don't pay any attention to that man behind the curtain, okay? Ignore him. That's this thing. Don't pay any attention to him. For to think differently is like the sun asking for more light. You've got it all. We started out with it all. We just forgot to remember, didn't we? We've forgotten to remember who we are from the beginning, before the world was formed. That's all. And we're forgiven for that. We've been forgiven. Yeah. Okay, that's it.
Are we getting there?
Yes. Wow, just awesome.
Yeah.
Awesome time.
It is beginning to become so intense that whatever is happening in your own life, what you feel is happening, and if you intensely not only listen but meditate on the things that you hear, the anxiety of being, whatever you feel, will dissolve. And you'll find yourself in a place of harmony and peace. Now. Yeah, wonderful.
Wonderful.
Well, we're going to have a cup of tea.
Right, yeah. Buffet.
And whenever